Hello, teens on the internet. You're listening to Jeff from Snack Point Charlie on WGXC Accra 90.7 FM, home of the hits.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tamro in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And on this snowy Friday, we're going to hear an interview with Jasmine Gripper from the Alliance for Quality Education about that story in the Times Union about how New York is the most segregated state in the nation for black students in schools. We'll also hear about the war in Ukraine, unfortunately, and the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all begins after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Airwaves controlled. In-air channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network, this is the news. This is the network, this is the news. This is the network, network, and the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through, and the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network, and the moon turns to blood. The stream runs through, and the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network, this is the news. This is the network.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Elizabeth Powell Leather Items of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXC Daily News for Friday, February 25th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that State Senator Elijah Raishan Melnick, a Democrat, on February 24th proposed legislation designed to punish Russia for its invasion of Ukraine by having New York sever economic ties with the country. Raishan Melnick's proposal would ban the awarding of state contracts to any company that is conducting business with Russia. At the same time, New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli's office would be authorized to begin divesting the state's pension fund from companies that have business interests in Russia. Quote, Russia's unprovoked and illegal invasion of Ukraine demands the strongest possible response. New York State does not invest in or support companies that do business in North Korea or Iran, and Vladimir Putin's reckless actions have now put Russia in the company of those rogue nations, unquote, Raishan Melnick said. The proposal was made as international sanctions were being issued following the attack. President Joe Biden at the White House on February 24th announced that U.S. sanctions would include actions against Russian banks and make Putin a pariah on the international stage. Read more about the story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com. Natasha Von Holdridge is reporting for Columbia Green Media that officials with the Columbia Economic Development Corporation are encouraging residents to take the state's broadband assessment survey to help produce the most accurate maps possible to highlight the gaps in high-speed internet service for rural and low-income communities. The Columbia Economic Development Committee is encouraging county residents to participate in the survey at empirestatebroadband.com by March 18th. Quote, in addition to helping identify unserved areas throughout the state, this survey also has attitudinal questions about broadband in general and future enhancements that providers might consider based on people's response, unquote, CEDC President and CEO F. Michael Tucker said. State residents must report their accessibility to high-speed broadband internet, including the cost of available utilities and download and upload speeds, to help state officials identify connectivity deserts, especially in rural upstate communities. Questions in the state survey ask about different levels of service, pricing, and type of use for the connection. The survey is expected to take less than 10 minutes to complete, and upload and download speeds can be tested at the site as well. Quote, this is a one-time survey so they can be ready for the federal funding, unquote, Tucker said. The results will help officials at the state and local levels make decisions about broadband expansion projects. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And Rachel Silberstein is reporting for the Times Union that New York's kindergarten through 12 public schools will see a substantial drop in enrollment for the second year in a row, according to data just released by the State Education Department. The public school system lost 60,000 students in the past year alone. However, the 2021-2022 data reported by district could change considerably before final enrollment is reported later this year due to a number of factors, including students transferring out of districts or dropping out. The pandemic appears to have accelerated a steady decrease in public school enrollment since 2011-12. In 10 years, enrollment has fallen 8% statewide, from just under $2.7 million to $2.45 million, a loss of more than 212,000 students. The southern tier is on track to see the deepest enrollment losses in the state for the second consecutive year, losing 4.7% of its student population in 2 years. In the capital region, Greene, Schoharie, and Columbia County saw the steepest declines. The number of Greene County kindergarten through 12th grade students dropped 7.4% in 2 years, while Schoharie and Columbia County saw enrollment losses of just over 6% during the same time period. The only New York region that appears to have gained public school students in the last 2 years is the North Country. State education officials said it's unclear why the public school population has fallen in 2 years. Quote, while there may be a variety of pandemic and non-pandemic related factors for the enrollment decline, we cannot speculate on what specifically caused the decline, unquote, Education Department spokesperson Emily DeSantis said. Read more about this story in the Times Union, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org. The WGXC Radio Awards are this Saturday on the radio, and this year, not just programmers can vote, but anyone who is a sustaining supporter of WGXC should have gotten an email with a link to a place to cast your ballot. So look in your email box if you're a WGXC sustaining supporter or a WGXC programmer, and make votes today for the WGXC Radio Awards, which will be announced Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. on February 26th on 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, February 25th. Early morning temperature range is 16 in East Jefferson to 23 in Snyderville. As of 6 a.m., snow on the ground has been reported. We got an inch in Galboa. We got 2.5 inches in Middleburg. Another 3 to 4 inches is expected to fall across the region after sun up. It will thin out after 1 p.m. Chance of sleet between 9 and 11 a.m. will present itself. A high of 34 happens at 4 p.m. After dark, snow tapers off, stopping completely by 10 p.m. A low of 10 degrees happens just before dawn tomorrow. Saturday will be dry with a high of 31 degrees. 13 degrees overnight takes us into a Sunday with some rain in the afternoon and a high of 41 degrees. Monday, back to cold with a low of 10 and a high of 23 degrees. Sunset today will be at 5:25 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:33 a.m. Looking way up, we see some pretty active regions on the far side of the sun that could be coming into view this weekend. Solar flares could be possible. Solar wind speed is currently 444 kilometers per second at 7.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 MHz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 23. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Chris Anderson of Germantown, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Wake up! Wake up, wake up, wake up! Up you wake, up you wake, up you wake, up you wake! This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy, your voice of choice, the world's only 12-hour strong man on the air, here on We Love Radio.
Часто тому назад я закончил партитуру двух частей большого симфонического сочинения. Если это сочинение мне удастся написать хорошо, удастся закончить третью и четвертую части, то тогда можно будет назвать это сочинение седьмой симфонией. Для чего я сообщаю об этом? Для того, чтобы радиослушатели, которые слушают меня сейчас, знали, что жизнь нашего города идет нормально. Все мы несем сейчас свою боевую вахту. Советские музыканты, мои дорогие и многочисленные соратники по оружию, мои друзья, помните, что сейчас нашему искусству грозит великая опасность. Будем же защищать нашу музыку, будем же честно и самоотверженно работать.
Like play a peace title. Oh Lord, don't let them drop that atomic bomb on me. Jesus.
Took my wife and kids and I left my home unguarded. Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Peace on our continent has been shattered. We now have war in Europe on a scale and of a type we thought belonged to history.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg condemned Russia's invasion of Ukraine, saying more NATO troops are moving into Eastern European member states to deter further Russian aggression. The UN Security Council will vote today on a resolution condemning Russia's invasion and calling for an immediate and unconditional troop withdrawal. At the White House, President Biden announced new economic sanctions on Russia and warned it was too early to call the situation a new Cold War.
There is a complete rupture right now in U.S.-Russian relations if they continue on this path that they're on. And in terms of a Cold War, that depends. You have the vast majority of the rest of the world in total opposition to what he's doing.
The president said the U.S. would cut off Russia's largest banks and largest companies from the Western financial markets and would restrict exports of technology to Moscow. Vice President Kamala Harris called the invasion a war of choice.
It is unprovoked, it is unwarranted, and it is unjustified, as the president made clear from the beginning. If Russia were to take aggressive action against Ukraine, our response would be swift and certain, and that is in fact what has occurred.
Approximately 7,000 U.S. soldiers will deploy to Germany in response to the invasion, top military officials confirmed. Former president of International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, Dr. Ira Helfand, warned a war could lead to the use of nuclear weapons. Both NATO and Russia have provisions for the use of nuclear weapons in their military doctrines.
If we escalate to the use of nuclear weapons, it is not likely that a single bomb would be used on a single city on each side. Rather, it's more likely that many cities in each country would be attacked with many nuclear weapons.
Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, Jan Egeland, urged world leaders to consider the humanitarian cost of war and said hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians will be displaced.
The story is the civilian suffering. The people who are engulfed by this fighting, who are in crossfire, are to a large extent elderly people.
Putin's invasion has also upended global markets, and experts say it will likely spike commodities prices linked to metals, grains, and energy products, and worsen inflation. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
The Hudson schools are hosting community budget workshops on March 1st, March 15th, and April 5th ahead of the school vote on the budget. You can turn out to learn more about the proposed budget for the Hudson schools this year on either March 1st, March 15th, or April 5th, and find out more about these events in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined today by Jasmine Gripper, who is the Executive Director of Alliance for Quality Education. And we've often had AQE on the show to talk about the need for more funding for education in New York State, particularly in low-income schools and in rural schools. But there was a report out by UCLA project, Civil Rights Project, which shows that 70 years after the Supreme Court decision against school desegregation in Brown versus Board of Education, that unfortunately New York actually leads the country in segregation among African-American students and is the second worst after California in Latino students. So Jasmine, I know this, unfortunately, this doesn't surprise you, but, you know, why is this the situation?
Yeah, thank you for having me, Mark. The reason why this is the case is mostly because of our communities are segregated. Housing is segregated. Oftentimes, you know, you have to cross the bridge or cross the railroads and the neighborhood changes. And because Black people tend to live next to other Black people, you go to school with mostly other Black students. And so you think about historic housing policies, redlining, white flight to the suburbs, all of that has played into multiplying the segregation impact on our public schools.
You know, one of the things that was interesting just reading this article was that, you know, while it was in the South that more legally enforced segregation, that after the Supreme Court decision, they actually, you know, sort of obeyed court orders. And whereas particularly in the Northeast and especially in New York, a lot of resistance to busing. And it was sort of interesting in the South, sort of the parents' fears about desegregation never evaporated, you know, basically never occurred. And they sort of moved on, whereas here in New York and the Northeast, white families have continued to resist desegregation.
Yeah, I mean, many people are surprised because the North typically gets a better rap when it comes to racism. But, you know, that's not really the case. It's almost like racism light in the North. In the South, it has always just been upfront and in your face and unapologetic. And in the North, it was a bit more subtle. And it only got really loud and obnoxious when they were forced to integrate. And again, people just changed the laws. They changed the rules. It's literally how the suburbs in America got built, was white people leaving neighborhoods, forming new towns and new communities to create new school districts that excluded Black and brown children. And so we now have a system in place where, you know, New York is the worst offender with our neighborhoods being deeply segregated and resources being really pulled away from the cities and into suburbs. And that hoarding of resources really creates the haves and have-nots in public education.
You know, this summer, the Times Union, you know, headlined the story, you know, A Tale of Two Cities, which actually was the campaign theme when Dr. Alice Green ran for mayor 20 years ago. But the reality is that neighborhoods like the South End and Arbor Hill, Sheridan Hollow, West Hill still suffer from significant basically housing redlining, housing discrimination. And, you know, there's been efforts to call for putting a lot more money into trying to overcome that, but it doesn't seem to be successful. What do you think needs to happen, particularly both locally, but also statewide?
Yeah, I think what often does happen is by the time resources are invested in Black and brown neighborhoods, those resources are usually used as a tool for gentrification and pushing out the low-income Black folks who have been there for the longest. And so that's the cycle we need to disrupt, is that we can better communities and allow Black people to stay in their homes and stay in their communities. We can make sure resources are distributed evenly. We can make sure our public schools are fully funded. It's a disgrace that in New York State, you have literally some of the best funded and number one school districts in the country. And on the flip side, you also have the extreme opposite and just really just miles apart from each other. And so this is something New York has to take a strong look at. I think, you know, right now we're in the midst of this humongous battle around the attacks on critical race theory. And folks are trying to ban books. And New Yorkers sometimes think that, that's not happening here, but it's happening here. It's happening here in the suburbs of New York. It's happening in Long Island. It's happening here in the Capital District. It's happening in the suburbs of Rochester, where we see really white parents who are hell-bent on making sure their kids don't learn an accurate view of history. They're really committed to hoarding resources, and they don't want those kids, the other kids, to come into their schools. And so we really need to have a look in the mirror in New York. We really need to do some deep diving. We really need our schools to be committed to teachers and students taking racial sensitivity classes, you know, anti-racism classes. We really need culturally responsive education in our textbooks, in our curriculums, and it can't be optional. We need a commitment in New York State to teach truth. And then we also need a commitment to think about integration thoughtfully. I do want to flag, you know, at this point, you know, the majority of students in public schools are students of color in many communities. And we can't think about integration as just moving a few white kids here and a few Black kids here. That is not the solution at all. And I'm not even being a proponent of busing. I think, you know, folks look at integration efforts as a band-aid. Because resources were hoarded at mostly white schools, the only way Black and brown kids could get access to a quality education was to go to those schools. The answer to that doesn't mean we have to move Black kids around the city and the state. The answer is we need to stop hoarding and excluding resources. We need to close the opportunity gap. You know, too much attention is focused on an achievement gap, but the reality is that it all starts with an opportunity gap, because when your school is underfunded, when your school doesn't have the resources, you're not afforded the same level of opportunities. And so New York really needs to close that opportunity gap. And whether you go to a school where the kids are mostly Black or mostly white, you should be afforded the same opportunities. You should have access to the same level of resources. And across the board, we need to do anti-racism and anti-bias trainings.
Well, that, of course, has been one of the hallmarks of Alliance for Quality Education, you know, one of the leaders in the fight to reform how our schools were funded. And but, you know, even when you won the lawsuit campaign for school equity, it seemed took 10, 15 years for that to finally begin to move. And they basically sort of agreed last year, I guess, to finally really implement it. But how much more needs to be done in terms of real fiscal equity?
Yeah, I do want to say New York State is on track to getting better at fiscal equity, right? There's a 3-year commitment to phase in what we call the foundation aid formula, which is the most equitable school funding formula we currently have. But we're only in, we're getting ready for year 2 of that phase in, right? Like, this is a snail's pace. And, you know, there's a lot of fear that will the state renege on its promise again, like it did 15, 20 years ago. And so we don't need to just pay lip service to it. We actually need to do it and maintain it. And I think that's going to be really important to see if New York not only just pledges to fully fund our schools, but actually when we get to that 30-year phase-in in 2023, that the state maintains that level of funding and potentially revisit how the formula could be even more equitable to make sure we are addressing needs and the resources are going to the students who need it the most.
So we have about 90 seconds left, so I'll give you a two-part question. One, people want more information about your work, where to get it. But, you know, how does the, you know, the really top education leadership in New York State, I guess, starting the Board of Regents, how committed are they to a plan to deal with this issue of, you know, New York State for decades now has led the country in segregation of our school system?
Yeah, I will say the New York State Board of Regents has done quite a bit on like culturally responsive education. They have put out an entire framework for principals, for school districts, for students, for teachers, and for parents. But our schools are really in local control, and the State Education Department has really not been forceful in mandating schools to do certain things. And so, and again, every time the rules have been applied to create more equity or inclusion, folks just change the rules, right? People move to different communities, they start new school districts. And so, yes, we want SED to provide some guidance, but we really need the local school districts, the local school boards across New York State to be committed to rectifying this effort. And if you wanna know more about AQE, you can catch our website, aqeny.org, and we're on all the socials at aqe_NY.
Well, thank you very much, Jasmine Gripper, Executive Director, Alliance for Quality Education. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
shine.